Okay, good afternoon. I'll call to order meeting the State Government Budget Division for February 25, 2009. We have three of the constitutional officers here today. We're going to go out of order from what the agenda says because some of the officers actually have commitments that they have to be at. So we'll start with the Secretary of State. Secretary of State Auditor, Secretary Richard, you're going to be third. So Rebecca Otto is the State Auditor's first. So, Madam Secretary, welcome back to the Budget Division.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Rebecca Otto, the Minnesota State Auditor, and Matt, can you help? Okay, here it is. And I am here today to present our budget, and I put together a PowerPoint for you. Just to sum it up for you, and it's got some nice graphs. Okay, so Mr. Chair, can I begin?
Yeah, go ahead, yeah. We've got a copy of it here. So.
Super. Okay, so this is a presentation of our budget for fiscal year 10 and 11. Oh, no, that's not right. Okay. Okay.
It's coming up.
Help me, Matt. What do I do? Arrows, got it. Okay. Sorry. Technology is my forte. Okay, so the office overview. Our mission of the office is we oversee over $20 billion a year in local government spending. We do this. We perform audits of local government financial statements. We investigate allegations of wrongdoing. We issue reports on local government finances and trends. We oversee tax increment financing districts and fire relief association pension funds. Each year, we perform approximately 150 financial and compliance audits. We review approximately 400 single audit reports. We handle over 1,000 inquiries from the public and local officials regarding local government financial matters. We handle over 100 special investigative matters related to financial wrongdoing. And we collect and analyze financial data from over 3,300 local governments. We're like a little engine that could. What we do, review investment and regular reporting for approximately 730 public pension funds that supports our firefighting in Minnesota. We oversee approximately 2,100 TIF districts. We publish comprehensive reports and analysis of Minnesota's local government finances, which I know your staff uses quite often. We help local governments achieve best practices, and we are convening an annual volunteer fire relief working group, and we have a working group bill every year. I wanted to share some outcomes with you today. We do conduct special investigations, and I wanted you to know some of what's gone on in our office. I list the entity where something went wrong, the dollar amount, and then what happened, what the result was. So Winnebago Fire Relief Association, these are pension funds. $2,987 was taken. The treasurer was convicted of misdemeanor theft, and the treasurer was ordered to pay restitution in the same amount. The city of Henning, a small city in greater Minnesota, the loss was $18,460. The city's utility billing clerk was convicted of felony theft by swindle and was sentenced to 30 days in jail and restitution for the same amount. Norman County East School District, this is recent. This is a district that's in statutory operating debt who'd been laying off staff. They had a loss of $118,701. The bookkeeper was charged with four felony counts of theft, embezzlement of public funds, and check forgery, and her first appearance is scheduled for today, so it might be happening right now as we speak. The Kuchiching Economic Development Authority, Greater Minnesota, had a loss of $341,742. The administrative secretary was convicted of a felony and was sentenced to 1 year in jail and restitution for the full amount and 100 hours of community service. Chiron Charter School, which you may recall, the loss of $285,835. The director convicted of felony theft by swindle and was sentenced to 1 year in the workhouse and restitution of $285,835. PAC 4 Family Collaborative, which was a program in a county, the loss of $29,323. The director was convicted of three counts of felony theft by swindle. They entered an Alford plea and were sentenced to 180 days in jail, 100 hours of community service, full restitution, and 10 years probation. And finally, the National School Fitness Foundation, you may recall, this was actually a $60 million nationwide Ponzi scheme, which our office uncovered. It had gone to lots of places and no one had done anything about it. We took it and did something with it. Minnesota school districts, about 18 of them in Minnesota, lost about $1 million. The two people involved, they got federal criminal convictions. chief executive sentenced to 17 years in federal prison. Mm-hmm. The board chair was sentenced to 5 years, 8 months in federal prison, and both were ordered to pay $39 million in restitution. And I believe that some of the school districts in Minnesota have recovered some funds.
Okay. Yes. Madam Secretary, do you uncover this information during your audits? If you're at liberty to say, or does somebody just tip you off, or how do these come to your light?
That's a great question, Mr. Chair, members. And so these can come to us in a variety of ways. If a citizen thinks something wrong, they can call us and say we believe there's wrongdoing. But there's also a section in statute 609.456 that requires that local officials, if they suspect or see evidence of misuse of funds, they have to call our office and inform us. Sometimes we'll hear from law enforcement because it's already rolling. So we tend to go in and do the specialized auditing techniques for them to figure out the full amount of the loss so they can try to get the funds back. And that's one of the very important services we provide. Some of these entities could not afford to hire a private CPA firm to do this. They just don't have the funds. And some of them would rather not, and we're happy to go in and do this work because we feel it's important that those tax dollars go to the right place, especially in our schools. I mean, they're all important, but this is serious money here. Did I answer your question okay, Mr. Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So in my tenure after 2 years, I've been working very hard to be proactive and preventative with local government officials to try to help them do the right thing in the first place with public funds and try to help them avoid misuse of funds. So we've done a lot of educational outreach in a very creative manner. We don't have a lot of people. But over 430 fire relief trustees attended pension division trainings in 07 and 485 in 08. Over 415 people attended TIF training statewide in 07 and 250 in 08. The number dropped because we decided to do more hands-on intensive workshops. Over 195 local government staff attended audit practice division trainings in 08 and 120 in 09. Over 400 CPAs were trained in legal compliance auditing at CPA Society conferences in 2008. Over 495 local government finance staff were trained in detecting fraud in 2008. And over 375 local government officials attended CTAS training in 07 and 325 in 08. CTAS is financial software that our office developed and supports for towns and small cities. Over 540 local government officials attended legal compliance training in 2008. We want to make sure they know what they need to do. All right, so the governor has proposed for the biennium 10 and 11 a cut, a total of $144,000 to our office. And so I've laid that out for you. You'll notice that, I'm going to go back, that the audit division does not have any numbers reflected in it because audit practice, you make a general fund appropriation, but we backfill the general fund with the fees, so in the reimbursement. So it doesn't have an impact on the general fund, so it doesn't make sense to cut it. Tax increment is a statutory appropriation, so there's nothing there either. Do you want me to say anything further about this slide, or can I move on?
I don't know. Any questions about the governor's proposals? I think we'll have some overall questions later on, but go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. So when we looked at our budget criteria for the next biennium, we used the following items: fulfill statutory responsibilities, realize legislative mandates, ensure transparency and accountability in local government finances, and minimize the impact on the general fund. This budget is based on fiscal year 2009 appropriation, and we have two change items for you today, a staff retention change item and an investigative oversight change item. And we've done this realizing that you have a very difficult situation on your hands, and we're very sensitive to that. If you look at the base budget for 10 and 11, it'll be $9,178,000 for each, so it's for the biennium $18,356,000. Our staff retention change item is $617,000 for the biennium, and the change item for investigative oversight is $163,000. So the total proposed general fund appropriation is $20,468,000. By division, I list everything by division, and realizing that audit practice, the $13,425,000, you make an appropriation, but then we collect fees to cover that, so it doesn't have an impact on the general fund. There's other divisions in our office that also get fees and reimbursements or offsets, but I wanted to highlight that one.
So could you just review again, are there proposed cuts? Where actually would they be showing up in your office?
They're not. They're not showing up in this. I showed you the initial slide. Right. I'm going to show you this, and I'll finish, and then you can ask me questions.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Gotcha. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So using a pie chart, out of practice is the majority of our budget. Operations management supports the whole office in many different functions. Our legal special investigations is only 6% of the budget, and I'm not going to go through all of them, but they're all fairly small. Our proposed budget for 10 and 11, 80% is recovered by fees and reimbursements or offsets paid by local governments. So of that full amount, only $4 million has an impact on the general fund from our office, which is very small to the big budget. I also have a bar graph to show you. The dark bars, all the dark areas, are fees and reimbursements for each division. So audit's 100%, TIF is 100%. Operations management is, you know, the majority of it, and pension quite a bit is. We used to have more for Government Information Division and Jobs E because it was taken out of local government aid. But somebody last session changed that. So now it looks like we have more of an impact on the general fund. And that's a policy decision, I guess, for the legislature to decide if that was a good idea or not. Expenditures by cost group, we wanted to show you when we get the funds. That basically, the state auditor's office is people. 90% of our budget is people. It's personnel. And I just wanted to point out that since I've been in there, we're not issuing lots of paper copies of reports. We make them available, but we do electronic. Our communications budget is less than 1% of our budget. There's lots of things that I've been able to do to gain efficiency, to collect information from local government, to do less handling of data, so a lot more of it is reported electronically. And our travel budget, we cover the state. It's only 1.2% of our budget. We are very, very lean. We're very efficient, and we do not waste money.
Mr. Chair.
Sir Roebling.
Thank you. On to that point, just yesterday I read your municipal liquor report. Well, I read the summary, and then I looked for the ones in my district to see if they were making or losing money. And I printed up just one page, just the one that we had ours on. So, yeah, we could save a lot of printing costs by doing that.
Yes, Senator Roebling and Mr. Chair, and we have. They're not automatically mailed anymore. Audit reports is a different situation. All of our other reports we issue are there. We print a small number for libraries that have requested them and things, but otherwise, most people are okay with the electronic. So it's worked very well. Thank you. Our staff retention change item. So the office oversees $20 billion per year in local government spending, which is a large sum of taxpayer dollars. Our staff is made up of highly trained and sought-after specialized folks that carry out this mandate. It takes a long time for them to learn how to do government auditing and a lot of education. The OSA needs to keep the staff that it has to continue this critical work that the public expects. The federal stimulus funds requires additional oversight, and I'll be doing a conference call tomorrow with the U.S. Government Accountability Office and all the other state auditors around the country to start talking about what this is going to entail and what it takes. So in a time like this, oversight actually needs to be added to, not taken away from. Staff retention change item. Our request is for $617,000 for the biennium. When you take out the fees that we get through audit, it's actually the net impact on the general fund is $45,000, which is 0.2% of our base budget. So nearly 93% of this change item is recovered by offsets and will have no impact on the general fund. Okay, and now, we have an investigative oversight change item, and out of all due respect, I struggled with this one to even bring it to you. I feel it is my duty and responsibility to bring this to you as a legislature so you're aware of the fact that in an economic downturn, there's an increased danger of fraud and misuse of public funds, and it's happening. Business is a little bit too good in our office right now. And because of that, and I can't tell you how slim it is, I've got maybe one person doing all this work, because they have other duties, and there's another half-time person, but they have other duties. So we're really working hard to push this stuff through. Reports of misuse of public funds has increased, so we're seeing more. And an additional FTE would allow us to conduct investigations and our other work in a more timely manner, because these people wear many hats. So the total change item for investigative oversight for the biennium is $163,000, which is 0.9% of our base budget. And I wanted to bring that to you because I feel it's my duty. So,
Mr.
Roebling,
where did the governor put some extra money? Wasn't he proposing to put some extra money in?
In
finance?
Auditors there.
Oh, okay.
Is that a rest? It was in the flex.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
I thought, Mr. Chairman and Senator Roebling, I thought that the comment I heard from Commissioner Hansen was that for internal control issues, that they were considering adding auditors to the Department of Minnesota Management and whatever budget. Yeah, the state auditor, I'm assuming, is talking about fraud opportunities in local governments, not in the state government. So it's the same thing, but
different.
Far more tentacles. Same issue, same whatever.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members.
Madam Secretary.
Recap, net impact on the general fund with our staff retention change item, our investigative oversight change item, and then taking into account our audit fees that recover part of this, the net impact on the general fund is $179,000 for the biennium, or 1.1% of our base budget. Our goals in the office, which we stay focused on, is to provide the tools and resources necessary for Minnesota's local governments to be successful stewards of over $40 billion in public funds during this budget cycle. And so with that, you know, we do it through auditing, we investigating, reporting, and educating. My goal as auditor is I don't want any more bad headlines about government funds going missing. We're really trying to get them in better shape, which makes us have to do less work. But right now in an economic downturn, there's more opportunity to commit fraud. And so it takes more diligence, and typically you add to oversight, you don't take away. And there are some states that have actually taking oversight off the table. So with that, I'll stop and see if you have any questions.
Okay. And your office obviously has to, you charge fees to the agents, to the government agencies that you are investigating. Do you, are the fees maintaining the same level? Have you increased them at all? What, comment on your fees?
Okay, Mr. Chair. So when we do an investigation, if there's missing funds, we do not charge the entity. And reason being that they would hesitate to call us sometimes. So that's one thing you all have decided is something the state pays for to make sure that we can recover those funds, or that the funds can be recovered through if, you know, they get a successful conviction and then restitution or collecting on bonds. Our audit fees, it's required in statute that we not over-recover or under-recover. So we have to adjust them based on what our costs are and things like that. So when I first came in, I think we had no increase. This year we had a small increase, and we let our local government entities know what that'll be, and we're very sensitive to those costs.
As I'm looking through the budget pages here, I just need a little bit of clarification. Page 6 of the budget book, the miscellaneous special revenues plan statutory spending was $223,000 for 2009. The governor's recommending $64,000 in 10 and 11. So, and I'm not quite sure what that's tied to.
Mr. Chair, page 6 or?
Of the budget books.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we've got the budget books, but says miscellaneous special revenue plan statutory spending, $223,000, and then the governor's recommending a reduction in that area down to $64,000.
I apologize, Mr. Chair. I was looking in the wrong place.
Okay, sure. Page 6 of the budget books.
All right. Under state auditor,
yes.
Page 6. I got it. I apologize. Okay. Bring this over here. And the $223,000 I'm looking for, let's see, miscellaneous special revenue. Do you know what that is, Matt? Mr. Chair, Matt Lindemann is with me from our office, and he handles budgeting, accounting, technology, and so I'm going to have him take a peek and see if
okay.
he can.
Okay. Welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Matt Lindemann. I'm the Director of Budget, Finance, and Technology for the office. You know, I'm not sure off the top of my head what that number is. I'd have to look at it a little more detail. But
okay. I'm just it's a relatively smaller amount, but you know, I'm just kind of curious as to, you know, what impact it might have on your office, whatever that's doing here.
Not sure either. Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, we don't know what that is.
Okay.
So we'll if you don't mind, can we get back
sure.
to you on that?
Sure.
Okay.
There was one other thing I'm trying to find. Any other questions of the state auditor's office? I did notice, I thought there was one other area where you had sort of a spike in your operations from last year to this year, and that's going down, and I'm trying to find where that is. Is that, did you have some increased activities this past year that this fiscal year that would have accounted for any unusual work that you needed to do then, or?
To spend everything. Okay, Mr. Chair.
If you look at the 2009 fiscal year budget and compared to the 2008,
right.
Obviously the 2009 is a projected amount, not an actual amount.
Right.
We did have a little bit of a carry forward from the previous year, mm-hmm. and when preparing the budget book, I included those dollars as expenditures, those carry forward dollars as sure. expenditures. So it does look like there's a spike, but... And there usually is a little bit of a spike because we hold off buying some capital, doing some capital expenditures, you know, buying equipment and stuff until the second year of the biennium, just to be conservative. You know, yeah. we're an audit organization and we're fairly conservative with yeah. what we do.
So. Specifically, where I was looking, if you got page 9 of the budget books, it has towards the bottom expenditure by activity. And one of those lines says operations management. It's $746,008, jumps up to $1,003,009, and then drops back to $770,000 for both years. I just, you know, it just seemed a bit of an increase there, and I wasn't quite sure what that was referring to. So,
Mr. Chair, the operations management division is responsible for purchasing common equipment such as servers and other equipment such as that that's used by all the divisions in the office. And again, it's mainly due to the fact that we're a little more conservative in the first year of the biennium, and there was a carry forward from the first to the second year, so our expenditures go up a little bit in the second year of the biennium.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair,
Madam Auditor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. With disaster planning, pandemic, and all the different things we have to look at, you have to have redundancies, and so part of it is we've been putting our redundancies in now. We also had equipment that was overheating and we're in danger of melting down, so we've changed to some new equipment. So for us, if our technology goes down, we're in trouble because we're very technology-oriented, and that's the nature of our work in terms of people reporting to us and us reporting information back out. So we've been doing due diligence to make sure we're prepared as an office.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions of the state auditor? Sarah Rest?
Madam Auditor, I know that you were not the auditor when this financial audit was done, but there were two findings in the audit.
By the legislative auditor.
Oh, sure.
The legislative auditor for the period January 1, 2005 through December 31st of 2006, and they involved that the findings were that the office did not certify the correct cost of audits and exams of police and fire relief associations to the Department of Revenue, and secondly, that the office did not charge some local units of government interest on past due accounts. It goes on to indicate that the prior audit report contained no findings, and your response indicating that Ms. Anderson was the auditor during this period, number one, indicates that you are now charging interest if payment is not received within 60 days of receiving the invoice from your clients, and that your office was developing new procedures to result in the correct amount of cost of audits and exams of police and fire relief associations. And I just want to know if you... if those procedures or those certifications are still in place, and if you continue to charge interest if payment is not received within 60 days.
Madam Auditor.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, and members, yes, those were things that happened before I got there, and when I got in and we got the audit findings, things were changed immediately because as an office, you don't want audit findings. I will say that the office got cut too far. I'll just be very honest about it. We can't go any further backwards. It would be irresponsible. And so we've gotten creative, and we have a receptionist helping when deposits come in. They log them in. And, you know, so there's different things we're working on to make sure we've segregated our duties and have internal controls and everything. And the interest, they're very, from everything I know, the interest is all being charged all the time. I mean, again, you know, we're here to set a standard, and so, you know, it's our staff definitely wants to do the right thing, and we're very sensitive about that. So, but because it was before I was there,
okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions of the state auditor? Well, thank you, Madam Auditor, and for the information.
Okay? Thank you.
Thank you. And then the Attorney General and Madam Attorney General, I understand you're under a tight schedule too, so we will do what we can to review your area. Welcome back to Budget Division.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. Thank you for having me. Shall I jump in?
Go right ahead. Yeah.
As you all know, the Attorney General is essentially the state's a law firm. We represent over 100 state agencies, boards, and commissions, both defending the state of Minnesota when it's been sued in court, as well as bringing lawsuits on behalf of the state of Minnesota, both in the state's own name as well as on behalf of the various state agencies. That is the bulk of the budget and the bulk of the work that is done on behalf of the office. In the area of public safety, the Attorney General assists rural county attorneys in certain criminal trials, primarily homicide trials. You know, if you're a small county attorney, you might even be a one- or two-person shop. You might have a homicide every 30 years, and we come in and help try that case on behalf of the county attorney. In addition, we assist rural county attorneys with criminal appeals. We assist with the implied consent revocation of driver's license, and as well assist county attorneys in sex offender civil commitment cases, and then also handle Medicaid fraud prosecutions on behalf of the state of Minnesota. As well, we enforce state civil laws that run the gamut from antitrust to charities to consumer protection. I think at any given time, we have about 3,000 open legal files in the office, so we're essentially a very big, busy law firm. And one change that we've seen is that the effects of a tough economy on the litigation practice. When you have a bad economy, lawsuits tend to go up. Lawsuits against the state go up, whether it's employment claims or tort claims or contract disputes involving the state, as well as lawsuits brought by the state, everything from bad building contractors to OSHA cases, health licensing cases. As people might cut corners, it tends to result in regulatory enforcement actions. We think we deliver good bang for the buck, saving money for the state by defending these extraordinarily complex claims. And I'm committed to operating the Attorney General's office in a fiscally sound and prudent fashion. Our budget's pretty simple. It's about 85% salary and personnel costs because we are a service agency or a law firm. And then the remaining 15% are fixed costs. About 10% of that or so is the leases that house our staff. And then about 5% everything you need to operate a law firm, ranging from Westlaw to law books to legal messenger fees and so on and so forth. So the bottom line for us is less money. Budget cuts mean fewer people. It means a reduction in force. I think we've got about 40% fewer attorneys than the office had in 1998, and it's made us operate very tightly and very efficiently, particularly in the face of this increased litigation, which is not only increasing in volume, but also more protracted. Litigation has gotten increasingly complex and sophisticated, and a tough economy tends to drag out a little bit longer than it might otherwise run. So I just appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I appreciate your time and consideration. I appreciate the task you have with the enormous fiscal challenges we have, and would be happy to take any questions.
What is exactly the governor's recommending for the Attorney General's budget? Is that it's a decrease as well?
Recommending a decrease as well of about $1.2 million per year. I think it's about a 5% cut to our general fund appropriation.
That's on page 7. What would that mean to your office if that was actually implemented?
It means a reduction in force to our office. Again, with 85% being salary or personnel, it would mean we have to have fewer people. I can't contain anything more in the 15% area. Those are fixed costs that have to occur to run a law firm, so it would mean less people. And we'd have to make some very tough decisions about what work it is we don't do on behalf of the state of Minnesota.
Somebody just told me yesterday, for instance, that you provide service to, I think that's like Stearns County, and you may not be able to provide that anymore because it's a large and growing county, but there's a point where you've got to let the large counties handle their own work instead of you doing it. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I'm going to have to evaluate twofold. One is what additional laws might be passed by the legislature. I think my staff found something like 3 dozen bills so far that actually give the Attorney General more work, not less work, and part of it will depend on what happens in that context. also going to have to evaluate what the courts ultimately do. I know the Chief Justice has indicated there may be some areas where the courts won't do certain functions they've handled in the past. Possible that would have an impact on our office. Implied consent cases, for example, if the courts were to change what, you know, not have implied consent hearings, that would help somewhat in terms of the budget situation. And then looking at areas where, you know, certainly in the public safety area, it is a form of local government aid, if you will. We essentially, for years and years and years, the Office of the Attorney General has handled these more complex prosecutions on behalf of the counties. It's a form of local government aid or subsidization of local units of government, and we would certainly have to take a look at could that be delivered anymore in the same fashion.
How about the fees that your office charges to the agencies that you assist? Is that fee structure changing, or how is that being handled?
We are, for the next biennium, we're increasing the hourly rate. I think about two-thirds of our budget is direct appropriations. About one-third are the so-called partner agency contracts where we bill the agencies for the work we render. Fee would go up from $101 to $114 an hour for lawyers for the next biennium. Although each year those partner agency contracts pretty much have shrunk. If you look at the last 10 years, each year has, I think maybe with one exception, you know, has been less than the year before. So I suspect that although we're increasing fees, as the state agencies, if they get cut, they're going to look at squeezing as well. And the impact of that is usually the hours get cut in those contracts. My guess is it would end up being close to a wash.
How about the you represent the smaller counties and,
yeah,
and sex offender commitments. Is that leveling off? Is it still increasing? What's happening there?
It is. I think in 2000 we helped about, there were about four sex offender cases filed by the office. The last several years there have been about 50 filed per year, and I think it's leveling off, but it's more at the 50 per year level, certainly not going down.
I did notice, if you've got the budget books, a similar thing that was in the governor's recommendation at the on page 6 at the very bottom. It says miscellaneous agencies has planned a statutory spending, and for the AG's office in 09 it was $718,000, and then the governor's recommending $60,000, and I'm not quite sure what that's tied to or what that refers to. Do you have that before you, Madam?
Mr. Chair, I do, and okay. I'm not quite sure either what it's tied to. I'd be happy to check as well. Good question.
Okay. I'm just, you know, when there's a cut, I just want to know what the outcome's going to be there. So, okay.
Absolutely.
So we did provide a couple of different attorney positions for your office in the last biennium. I guess were those filled or were those taken care of then? Or?
Yes, they were, okay. Although recently we were unallotted $1.2 million in the last unallotment, which sort of all the gains that had been made in the last couple of years were taken away by that. And
now,
we're
for the current biennium.
The current biennium, but they were filled at the time.
Okay.
Absolutely.
What impact on your office did that have, again, for the current biennium?
Very, very tough impact. I mean, if you figure $1.2 million in an office like ours, if you assume, say, $100,000 for an average attorney when you include the, you know, cost of health care for family plans, $14,000. If you assumed $100,000, 1.2 attorneys would be, or $1.2 million would be about 12 attorneys. We have not been filling vacancies, obviously, and have to look at how we're going to make that balance out, whether additional reductions of force are needed.
So it's tough. How many vacancies do you have vacancies right now then?
We have not been filling vacancies.
About how many do you
you know,
have any idea?
I can check and get back to you, Mr.
Sure.
Chair. I don't know the number.
No. I'd
be happy to get back to you.
Okay. Any questions of the Attorney General's office? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Swanson, the question I have is that traditionally we've always gotten the definition that the Attorney General's office is the attorney for the state government.
Mm-hmm.
And yet over the years it's kind of morphed into more. Past attorney generals have gotten into consumer protection. They write legislation. Well, I might correct that. They suggest legislation, and your office now represents other political subdivisions in their criminal or civil cases.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, since it's kind of gotten a little beyond the traditional role of what's defined, I think, is it in the Constitution your duties are defined in? As I look at these times when we have budget constraints, has there been any discussion in your office to maybe shrink the influence of the office and let's say, political subdivisions handle their own cases? Or it might be a good segue into the discussion of consolidating counties so that they can achieve a base of resource where they could do their own work. And we're doing all of that discussion, too. So reinventing your office, perhaps not in a more traditional role rather than the expanded role, has your office gone through any discussion about that?
Member Attorney General.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, to the extent we have these difficult fiscal times, one of the things that we do have to look at is what extent can the office continue to provide the level of services, for example, to the county governments or local units of government. I think we operate very, very lean and efficiently, but that is certainly one of the things that would have to be on the table is how much can we deliver those services. You know, when I think of the Attorney General as the chief legal officer of the state of Minnesota and the role is defined in the Constitution, in the statutes, as well as the common law. And so it is a broad role the Attorney General plays in terms of, the work of the office. And one of the things, we have to look at is, are there other cops on the beat, if you will? Is this something uniquely that we're able to do, or might there be somebody else who can do it?
Mr. Chairman. I need to apologize. I called you Ms. Swanson. I should have used your title in addressing you. I'm sorry for that.
You can call me Lori if you want, Senator.
I'm not quite sure where I'm going on it, but I'll pass for now, Ms.
Okay. Senator Russ, address
it. I have another question.
The Attorney General's last audit had no findings. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator.
Whose watch was that on? What time period was that?
July 1, 2005 through December 31st, 2006.
So. Of course, the Attorney General was working there at the time also. Okay.
Right.
But I'll take it anyway.
Do the same again.
Okay.
Yep.
Oh, still remember.
I do remember what I was going to say. Even I've used your consumer protection people in some mortgage issues of West Coast mortgages, companies that wouldn't even offer a balance for a client that I had. And I had to, somewhere out in California, there must be no law providing for who can answer the phone of a corporation. Because they use a lot of tape recorded messages there, and you can't get a hold of anybody. Mm-hmm. And so the office was very instrumental in helping private citizens just transact simple business in the state of Minnesota. And so I don't want to be too harsh, but I'm just kind of raising the question because I'm not quite sure where to either shrink or expand budgets when there's no money. And you're more the expert than I am on that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, I mean, to your point, for example, I'm very committed to operating leanly. I think years ago in the 90s, the office had three communications people. I got one guy doing communications and legislation at the same time. And I think in the 90s, there were 10 or so people doing legislation and got one guy doing all functions. And I'm aware of the circumstances in which we live. In Chapter 8, it actually recommends that it says the Attorney General shall recommend consumer protection legislation to the legislature. So we actually have a statute saying, at least in that area, one of the jobs is to recommend areas where the laws can be improved. And so we do that in certain narrow areas. But appreciate your comments.
Anything else for the Attorney General? Well, thank you, Madam Attorney General. And
thank you for your time. Appreciate
touch down the road, too.
Appreciate your time and consideration.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, guys.
And then finally today we have the Secretary of State's office. Secretary Ritchie, welcome back to the Budget Division. You'll need to identify yourself for the record, too. So.
Thank you very much. I'm Mark Ritchie, Secretary of State. Mr. Chairman, thank you for this opportunity to discuss briefly our budget. And I wanted to say before the Attorney General left that we've been a very big consumer of their services, and it's been extremely important to us, but she's gone. So
In the past couple of months, in particularly?
Yes, especially in the past couple of months. But okay. in general, the framework where we do not have attorneys in our office is served in all aspects of our work by the Attorney General's office, is quite an important relationship and is, you know, complex, and how the financial matters are handled, all of that is worthy of attention. But it's been very important to us. Let me give just a brief rundown of where we are in this budget process and in our overall operations, because, of course, we are an income-generating machine for the state. We generate about $13 million a year for the general fund. That's a combination of things like political filings, candidate filings, but primarily business services that we provide. And then we get an appropriation of about $6 million a year. So that income that we provide to the general fund, I think there's one impression that that will just keep coming no matter what. But for most of those clients or those customers who are coming through the doors or using our online services, they have the choice of Delaware or Wisconsin or some other place to do some of their filings, especially some of the corporate filings and others. So we are very sensitive to the fact that we need to maintain a level of service, a responsiveness. We need to maintain our reputation as a really good place to do these filings so that we do not in any way jeopardize that revenue stream for the general fund. And in some prior budget crunches, one approach has been to shut down our business services for part of the day or for a portion of the week. This has had disastrous effect, especially on the reputation of Minnesota as a place to do business. And I've heard directly from law firms and others who compete with law firms in other cities in Boston or the West Coast, East Coast, things that have damaged our reputation as a dependable, reliable place to do business and to do business filings is a very negative on their reputations as well. So we are very sensitive to how we must maintain those activities that we do that generate money for the general fund. What we found, at least in the big areas that where we generate funds right now, we need to be continuing to upgrade our technological approach. As you know from the last biennium, we were very grateful in your agreement and the legislature's support for a technology surcharge that's being charged right now to put all of our services online. We know this is important for keeping Minnesota competitive with other states, but also it's what our clients, customers in this state want. They want 24/7 access. And we also know that we will achieve cost savings long-term in terms of fewer staff handling paper and postage and all of that. We will be coming forth with the support of the business community and the business law division of the Minnesota Bar Association to continue that fee to be able to add some additional services that they've asked us to incorporate in that rewrite. So we see that as part of our long-term keeping Minnesota business filings as a very competitive option for not just our companies but for companies in other places. On top of that,
just on that point, yes. The temporary technology surcharges, I guess, is due to expire on June 30th. So you're saying that there'll be a bill coming in to extend that further? Then?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. We look forward to seeing the bill. Okay, thank you.
The other big part of our work, which I think everyone is perhaps tired of hearing about but has certainly been in the papers, is the giant election that we had last year, nearly 3 million voters, the biggest one in history, largest number of voter registrations, large number of new voters coming into the system, mostly young people, but others as well. And then we had two statewide recounts, and we had a number of other recounts that our office is responsible for. Whenever a recount goes beyond the borders of a county, we are responsible for that. Fortunately, our staff saw the possibility that these recounts would be necessary. They had advanced planning. They had already made arrangements for training, and they had made contractual relationships with the local county officials, the election officials in the counties, to perform the bulk of that work at a decentralized level. Some of you know some of these statistics, but In my office were plans for a recount, a centralized recount in 2004. It was anticipated that the presidential would be recounted 2006. There was another plan. There was anticipated a recount in the governor's race. Those were a little bit over $2 million for each time to do a centralized count. With the cooperation of the counties, this particular recount that we are not quite done with yet, but hopefully soon will be, was about $250,000, between $200,000 and $250,000. So about one-tenth the cost to do a recount at the local level. But that requires the local officials having a great deal of trust and feeling a partnership with our office. And so we put an emphasis on maintaining that relationship so that we can handle things like that recount at a very, very low-cost basis. And so far, this has been an important change. But in exchange for that partnership or that good cooperation, they make it clear to us things that we could do that would help them lower their cost, things that we could propose to you as legislators that could help them be more efficient, more effective at the local level with some small changes. For instance, we've discussed often, and actually the Senate has passed in the past, making our voter registration, currently the system with the Department of Motor Vehicles, it's an opt-in system. If we would simply convert that to an opt-out system, it could save the bigger counties as much as $1 million in a two-year election cycle, because the local election officials would not have to retype all of those address changes, would not have to find the corrections. I was in Isanti County, and the Isanti County auditor was pointing out to me that he himself has to do the typing when he has election day registrations, because they don't have clerical staff and the other things that bigger counties do. So we've been putting forth ideas to the legislature, but also making changes in our operation that can help those local partners of ours save money at the local level by making small changes. We now have roughly the same staff as when I came into office. But, of course, in that time, we've added a new program, the Safe at Home program, which was created by the legislature before I got into office. We've had a huge increase in business filings, some of that due to some rule changes in the Department of Labor. We had, of course, very big elections last year. I mentioned our largest election in history. And we've also were in the middle of creating our new all-online business service system and, of course, handling the recount. And the recount isn't over. Hopefully it'll be over soon, but it takes up our staff time each and every day. We have two categories of expenses, more or less, staff and technology. And we see ourselves as needing to maintain the technology, both to provide the business services that our customers need and want so they keep coming to us as their place to register. But we also found out in the recount that we needed to have the technology and also the skilled staff, particularly computer programmers, to be able to very quickly put together the software and the hardware to conduct the recount and to provide the information to the public in a transparent way. We could not have done the local recount, which cost one-tenth of the price of a centralized one, without having the kind of computer technology and the kind of computer staff that was needed to put that together so that that could function on a statewide basis. We want to be careful as we had a $400,000 unallotment right on the last day of the recount. It was kind of a shock, and I think it was something that we have to deal with. But we are aware that we could make cutbacks that would damage our reputation as a place to do business filings. We could also have cutbacks that would damage our ability to really make sure the public sees and is comfortable with and trusts in our elections and our election system. We know going forward we need to keep our technology investment up, and we also need to pay a lot more clear attention to educating the public, citizens, about voting and voting procedures. We've seen that. But also we need to keep investing more and more in our training, especially of local election officials. We've put forward legislation that will make some of the processes more clear, simpler, eliminate some of the things. But we also know that this will continue to need our full-time attention. We're committed to working with the legislature to make those changes to legislation, but also working with this committee and others to make sure that your problem of making this budget work We can be a part of that solution, but without jeopardizing revenue coming to the general fund or our ability to really ensure to the public free and fair elections. So thank you very much, well, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions. I mean, you mentioned, obviously, the costs of the canvassing board and the recount, which that came out of your office's budget to do all that. And then the unallotment. I mean, how did that impact other operations of the Secretary of State's office when, you know, obviously we hadn't appropriated the money to be doing this and you had to divert funds
exactly
in order to make sure this got done? What other areas were impacted as a result of this?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we had the two recounts, so we had both of those that came out of our budget, but we were not anticipating. The governor's unallotment was $400,000. We actually communicated with them about the fact that we were in the middle of a recount. We were about to go to them to ask for more money, and so $175,000, which is not the total cost of the recount, but that was a significant thing, was reduced from our unallotment. So our unallotment was $225,000. And so that's about $275,000 that we then had to go inside of our budget and cut. And so we just we lost a kind of a key staff and were unable to fill that position. But we also had to move two of our major technology investments that we need to do into the next biennium because we just don't have the cash to do it. One has to do with security, things that are about the security, and the other has to do with replacement of servers that have reached the end of their life. So it's about $275,000 that we ended up having unallotted actually. And then out of that money, then it came out of staff and technology. It's where we found the savings. And those are the two places that we look at in the future.
Was that the technology that we'd approved in the last biennium that that you're not able to do now because you had used money in the recount? Is that what you're saying?
Well, there were renewals of licenses. There were some software that had to do with security, and then replacement of servers. You know, you can push them out 1 month, 2 months, 3 months. You can push them out a certain period of time. We also were aware that we are not done with the recount. A portion of the money that we spent was directly given to the local election officials, about $100,000. So we're still anticipating some cost, and we're trying to figure out now where we will cut to meet those recount costs. We take the recount costs as, like a priority in the sense that there's no way to avoid them. So if we have to postpone something with our technology, that's what we'll have to do.
You've talked about the cost savings in having the U.S. Senate race recount done locally. Would you have even had the resources to have done it at a central location?
Mr. Chairman, absolutely not.
Okay.
$2 million was an estimate in 2004. Okay. What would it have been in 2009? $2.4 million. Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware of exactly how we would have done that. We would have had to come and talk to you.
Okay, Senator Rush?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it would just have been a deficiency bill.
Sure. I'm just kind of curious as to how what he was facing at the time. But
yeah.
Okay, gotcha. What's the Help America Voters Act account? What's the status on that?
Mr. Chairman, there's two aspects of the Help America Vote account. There's the older money, and there's still 2.2 or 2.4 million that's available to the counties for primarily for equipment, and that's largely because the metro counties have not made investment because they're waiting for new machines to be approved in the certification process. But they are in the middle of a discussion among the counties to decide how to handle that money. And then there's a new and probably the last of the HAVA funds that we've received, which are for upgrades on the statewide voter registration database. The emphasis has been on the list of upgrades that the cities and counties have requested. The top item for them was access to the absentee ballot module and for some of the things that they want to have to help them handle their local voter registration and absentee ballot responsibilities in a more cost-efficient way. We're hopeful that this Congress in the future will come back to elections and will say, you know, we've made a lot of demands on the states and, you know, we haven't provided adequate funding, but we haven't really heard that from the Senate or the House of Representatives yet, so we're not counting on any of those chickens before we see the eggs.
Sure. How about your fees? Are they maintaining? You talked about extending the temporary surcharge for technology fees. Are your other fees pretty much going to stay the same, or where do you see them going?
Mr. Chairman, the support of the business community and the business bar for the technology surcharge was really important, and their support of us to continue that, we consider that a very important piece of support. But part of that is that they want to make sure that our fees on other filings don't get out of line with other states. So it's a little bit of a marketplace out there, and so we're trying to be careful about, making sure that the things that we're charging. Our business services bill will have a few things that go up and a few things that come down and a few things that used to have fees on the front end, on the back end, move to the front end to save some paperwork. But mostly they will come in as a wash because we don't really want to bring in things with fiscal notes that has to do with fees. It is certainly the case that each and every time we have an opportunity to look at our fee structure and say, is this fair and can this be done differently, it's important to do. We will see cost savings when all of the online is available. And it may be that at that point there can either be funds that are generated that go to the general fund or some other, technological investment or some adjustment in those fees. And we hope to be able to come to that at the end of this coming biennium.
Is the governor making a recommendation for reductions?
Mr. Chairman, $313,000 per year.
What would that mean to your office then?
Us, what we, Mr. Chairman, what we have discussed internally is that we're going to have to extend out some of the things that we're doing over a much longer period of time, so we'll be unable to bring certain things online. But three of our areas are somewhat fixed because we have maintenance of effort requirements with federal monies that have come to us, the HAVA money. The business services hours and the desk and the customer service is something that people just say we can't make a change. And we also have some very specific requirements for the things that we must do that are our statutory responsibility. So we only can see cuts in ways that will take kind of the core out of our service. And so we rely now on the Attorney General's office for a number of things. We will need to rely on them for some additional things beyond that. We've been trying to keep our technology investments basically flat, so we're going to have to not make some of those technology investments and hope that we don't have any problems. And we also have put a lot of burden on our county people. And so we've been trying to take on some of those, like all the training responsibilities, but we'll need to force those back down onto the county levels to just to be able to, not have a staff there to do training and stuff for the local. I think like the other constitutional officers, our money goes to technology and to staff, and we will have to reduce, what we're able to do. And we're going to hope for no more big recounts.
Well, we got general elections coming up next year. We'll find out.
I fear about that.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the budget books for Secretary of State, page 6. It looks like there's a huge spike in 2009, which I'm assuming was related to the elections, but I'm not sure because there's a statutory appropriations miscellaneous special revenue that goes from about $3 million up to $8.5 million, which is kind of matched in the other operating expenses, and then the expenditures by program Secretary of State from $8.5 million to $17 million, then back to $9 million. So are those all election related, or do you have that page 6 of the book?
Yeah, I'm looking right now. Mr. Chairman, the portion of those would be the technology fee for the investment in the online, okay. And I think the other part is from the HAVA, from the election side. Mr. Chairman, we did have an interesting spike in the last 4 months of nearly $500,000 to the general fund because the Commissioner of Labor and Industry put out a notice to many contractors, general contractors, that a number of their employees needed to either be made fully employees with all the benefits of employment and occupational safety and payment into the state's unemployment fund, or they needed to become a limited liability corporation or some business entity as an individual as a way to get around those. A huge number of them chose to become LLCs. This gave a big boost to the general fund from our side, but I believe it will result in some reduction on the unemployment, in the state unemployment fund. I don't know that office, and I don't know how all that works, but on our side, we had a huge spike. It was about $500,000 in filings for limited liability corporations from individuals who are working in the construction industry or working as contractors in that industry. So, you know, we occasionally have those kind of odd things occur.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Secretary. Any questions of the Budget Division members? Sarah Rest?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Secretary. I have the audit report, the financial audit report from the legislative auditor from January 1st, 2005 through December 31st, 2006. And like the state auditor, that was not a period where you were in audit. You were in office, but the report, having been released in July of 2007, you were nevertheless responsible for correcting the audit findings. And there were five findings. So there had been four from the previous audit, which had been resolved, and there were no previous issues that were unresolved. So there were no duplicate findings. The first one had to deal with the manner in which some accounts were reconciled, and your response on that is that the staff was now aware of the proper process for reviewing the reports and doing the reconciliation. In the second one, it was security clearance that was inappropriate for an employee, and you indicate in your response there that had been taken care of. In the third one, it dealt with belief by the previous secretary that getting authorization from Dewar for certain wage levels for the employees was not necessary. The legislative auditor indicated that indeed those pay rates were submitted to Dewar. And in your response, you indicate that appropriate actions will be taken upon this review and the Department of Employee Relations policies. And I would just like to know, was that done?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ress, you very accurately described the situation. Our office believed it had the authority to make certain rule and rate changes on people. The auditor, the state legislative auditor, said that was not the case. Dewar then took on the review of all of those changes and made their own determination in terms of wage levels, and some people's salary levels went down. Many of the people that were involved in this were Rule 10 or somehow served at the pleasure of the previous secretary and were gone. And I don't believe Dewar made any attempt to recoup any of that money. It was a very messy situation.
But now all of the wages are submitted to Dewar to make sure that they are correct. That's what you say here.
Mr. Chairman, Secretary Ress, yes, everything we do goes through Dewar. We do not have that that kind of sub-authority.
And then on the audit finding four involved procedure for reviewing and monitoring payroll was not adequately understood when it was implemented and the reports were not examined to identify discrepancies, but that now you were going to, according to this your response, that procedures were going to be developed to ensure that employees properly certify their time and that any changes are documented and approved, and that audit reports are examined and appropriate actions taken. And you said that those changes were to be communicated and completed and communicated by August 1st of 2007. Did that happen?
Mr. Chairman, Citrus, yes.
Okay. And then the fifth finding had to do with the previous secretary's mileage reimbursement, and there was or between her home and the Secretary of State's office here in St. Paul, and there the discrepancies of what was appropriately claimed and what was not for travel reimbursement. You say in your response that those issues were in the process of being communicated to former Secretary Hifmeyer, appropriate clarification and or reimbursement obtained from her. And was a response given by her, and what was the outcome?
Mr. Chairman, Secretary Riss, Secretary Kipmeyer brought in a check, fairly substantial check for reimbursement, and that was the end of it as far as I know.
So that was taken care of by August 1st of that year, too? You said it was going to be
taken care of.
It was hot, and it was hot, so it was summer, but Mr. Chairman, Centuris, I'm not sure the exact date. I could get that,
okay,
but it was taken care of very well.
But you're it's
okay,
taken care
thank
of.
You
yeah.
very much.
Any other questions of the Secretary of State? Okay. Well, thank you, Secretary.
Thank you very much.
Again, if you could get a bill prepared on that extension of the technology surcharge, I'll introduce it, but I would like to see a bill introduced so we can have something that we can go to the Finance Committee and before this Budget Division. So if we can get a bill drafted and sent to us, we'd appreciate that. So
right away. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Members, let's see. Monday we'll have the Office of Enterprise Technology in. I had hoped to have the Minnesota Management and Budget in on Wednesday, but given the budget forecast, they're rather busy, so they're not going to be prepared. So I'm not sure if we're going to be meeting Wednesday or not. We'll just wait and see. We have not yet looked at the budget areas of the governor's office, lieutenant governor of the legislature, or Minnesota Management and Budget, but we'll get around to them. And then we will have made the full cycle, and then as we get ready to prepare our share of whatever budget we have to do. So with that, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you. See you later.